Today's podcast session is supported by Upheal. So if you ask a therapist who's doing clinical work what the bane of their existence is, usually progress notes are in the top 1 to 2. I'm not naming any names, but when I was doing clinical work, I remember I had several colleagues who would get so backed up on clinical notes, so they would end up spending their nights and weekends trying just to catch up. Honestly, who wants to do that? And this is where Upheal comes in. Upheal is AI-powered case notes. Now, I know for many of us, when we hear the word AI, there's like a natural skepticism. And honestly, I had that skepticism as well until I got to meet with the Upheal team and learn about some of the many ways that they are doing this in a way that is HIPAA compliant and also doesn't sell data to anyone and also protects our clients as well. You can learn more about Upheal and the awesome work that they're doing in the world by going to sellingthecouch.com/Upheal. And Upheal is spelled U-P and then H-E-A-L, all one word. And at checkout, be sure to enter the promo code COUCH25, C-O-U-C-H, and the number 25 to get 25% off your Upheal plan for the first 2 months. You're listening to session 3 of the Selling the Couch podcast. Yeehaw! Had to get my Texan in there.
Welcome to the Selling the Couch podcast, where our goal is to help you achieve your counseling private practice dreams. And now, the man who was obsessed with Usher in college, psychologist and podcaster, Melvin Varghese.
Oh man, Josh, thank you for that wonderful and slightly traumatic memory. I used to love Usher in college, and it's just a part of my life, I guess I have to admit to. Hey everyone, welcome to session 3 of the Selling the Couch podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to listen to this podcast, and thank you so much for all the messages and Facebook messages and emails and all the just the encouragement that each of you are providing. It really does mean a lot to me. You know, I've posted this before, but I'm not a huge risk taker. And the idea of starting this podcast and being so public, it was something that frightened me. And to be honest, like I put it off for a long time. And so it's just neat when we can realize and own this passion of ours, whatever that is, and be able to take steps and to see that it is well received. So thank you to everyone that's listening. Today's guest is one of my good friends that I've met online. His name is Bud Henneckes, and Bud is going to be talking about how to stand out on Twitter. So just to tell you a little bit about Bud, Bud has a podcast called The Boundless World, which he basically interviews people that have done really interesting things. Like, so for example, he's got a guest on there who has, I think he's watched a movie like every day for like 365 days or something like that. And it's just interesting. But the reason I wanted Bud to come on the podcast was because he's been on Twitter since 2008 or 2009, which is almost pretty soon after Twitter was released. And he's done some pretty interesting things with Twitter. He was able to actually land 3 jobs using Twitter. On his podcast, he's actually been able to get some really big guests who through just using Twitter and through connecting. So I wanted to bring him on because Twitter is an interesting social media platform. And if I'm honest, it's something that I'm still figuring out exactly how it works. I feel like every time I log into Twitter, it's just a overwhelming news stream of one thing after another, people promoting. And so I wanted to bring Bud on because my question and the thing I was struggling with is, how do you stand out on Twitter, especially if you're a small business? So and we get right into that and talk about it. So here's my conversation with Bud Henneckes from aboundlessworld.com. Hey, Bud, what's up, man? Glad you could join me.
Thanks so much for having me, Melvin.
Bud, tell us a little bit about you and so that my audience can get to know you a little bit better.
Absolutely. So one thing I really enjoy and has made a large component of my business and professional life is social media. I'm really obsessed with it. So I help people use social media to improve their business and build connections, that kind of stuff on Twitter.
Awesome. Yeah, I wanted to reach out to you because I feel like Twitter is definitely your strong suit. And, you know, we've connected personally, so we've gotten to be pretty good friends online. So it's amazing what you can do. Tell us a little bit about even how you got started with Twitter.
Yeah, so that's a great question. Most of my friends and people who know me literally will call me the Twitter guy, that kind of stuff. And I started on Twitter in, I believe, 2008. So I was still pretty early. And this was right around the time I was a junior or senior in high school.
Yeah.
And so
when did Twitter come out? Like, do you
I believe it was 06, 07. Okay. I'm not sure. Maybe 08. But I was still pretty early. So I was actually introduced to a internet marketer who reached out to me somehow. I don't know the exact story, but he wanted me to ghost tweet for them. And I had no idea what Twitter was. And so for a couple of weeks, I literally was ghost tweeting for this internet marketer. I don't know where he is at this point in his life, but got really hooked on the service and started using it pretty much every day, building relationships while I was over in Shanghai, China, going to school there because my dad moved over there for his job. And it really just kind of took off for me, right? And so I used it to build relationships, and I leveraged my Twitter audience to actually build out a pretty sizable audience at my blog, aboundlessworld.com. And ever since then, I've just been using it every day to build relationships. I've gotten, I think, three out of three of my jobs out of school have been through Twitter connections. So
that's amazing.
That's one cool stat.
That is really amazing. How so it sounds like what you see Twitter as is kind of a relationship building platform.
Absolutely. So that's one thing I differ a little bit. So a lot of people who are just now jumping on Twitter, it's a little bit late, but it's not too late to jump in and make a difference in that sense. But for me, it's more about relationships. A lot of people look at Twitter as a medium to push out their content, which is obviously a good idea, right? There's definitely an audience there, but Twitter is getting a little bit more noisy in that sense. So if you sent out a tweet 4 or 5 years ago, virtually everyone would see it, click it. But now because so many people are on it and it's becoming so heavy with the pushing of content, it's a little bit more difficult to stand out just purely from a content perspective. Mm. But for me, I'll tweet anyone who I think is interesting, or if I read a nice book, I'll tweet the author. And I'm just super surprised every day at how much engagement people have, real one-to-one connections. And that's where I see the most value in Twitter.
Yeah, so it sounds like one of the ways that you're standing out is you go against the grain, where Twitter's now, even, you know, I think about it, right? Like when I log on, it's like just in the 10 seconds I log on, it's like content after content after content. And so you're going against the grain, and it's more for you relationship building as opposed to just pushing out content.
Absolutely. And like it's a long-term process, right? So a lot of people expect to just start their Twitter, push out a few links and get millions of people back to their website. But for me, the relationships are really what amplify that, right? So if I make one solid connection, maybe a journalist who I enjoy, and then he does a story on me or whatever business you're in, that's going to stand out a lot more than just getting a few clicks to your content. But for me, it's just amazing the fact that I'll share two kind of quick case stories there. So like just so many people are reaching out. For example, I just recently applied to a job on Twitter, and literally probably 5 or 6 people who followed me, who have made relationships with, actually vouched for me via Twitter without me asking them to do it. So that's what I mean by the relationship aspect, is that's obviously going to help me stand out just a little bit in the job application process. And that was all organic. And that came from me adding value to people every day on Twitter, connecting people, that kind of stuff. And then I also was able to land my first job out of college with Gary Vaynerchuk. He's a social media guy and has his own agency, just by tweeting him and making a deal to trade 5 Super Nintendo games for a 5-minute interview. So that's what I'm talking about with the real value in Twitter and the relationships.
What would you say is a common mistake, you know, having been on Twitter as long as you have, what's a common mistake that small businesses often make on Twitter?
So we'll talk a little bit as a general mistake and then a little bit of a tactical one that I see a lot of people making as well.
Sure.
So the first one is just, again, that they just use Twitter to push, right? So whenever someone new on Twitter follows me, you can check who recently followed you by clicking followers. I'll check their profile out. And if I just see a bunch of links without engagement, that's a kind of a red flag to me. That just means that you're not willing to put in the effort. And it's surprising how many people do that. Twitter over the last 6 months to a year has changed that a little bit to where you can kind of edit your timeline, so you can just see tweets that were out to everybody, and then you can see the at replies. So one of the first things I do when someone follows me or I'm looking to connect is I'll check their at replies, and if I still just if their feeds are the same as direct, like sending out messages all organically and then no at replies, that's a big red flag. And I usually won't end up engaging with them.
Right. That concept of the at reply, explain what that is.
So the at reply is whenever, for those that are just starting out with Twitter, your listeners there. So the at reply is just a way to connect with people one-on-one, right? So when you start a tweet with an at, that tweet is only seen by that person as well as anyone else who's following both of you. So kind of getting into the tactical mistake I see a lot of people making is, for example, I'm a big fan of Blink-182. It's a little bit of an old school band, mm-hmm. right? So if I pull up Twitter and I go at Blink-182, everyone should listen to this band, I love them. Really, that's just sending it to them and whoever's following both of us. So obviously not everyone's going to see that tweet.
So it's very, very limited number, right? So it's not just your followers, but it's the overlap between Blink-182s and your followers.
Yeah, absolutely. So the point there, and it's a little bit tactical and kind of confusing, but in an audio format. So if I did really want everyone on who is following me to know I love Blink-182, I would start the tweet with just text. So I'd be like, I love Blink-182 so much. And then that's going to be pushed into the timelines of the people following me. So a lot of people will think they're trying to help out. They have really good customer service with a brand and they tweet starting with the at, and not many people will see that, which is unfortunate because if you're trying to help that brand grow, you want as many people to see that good customer service, that good interaction, that kind of thing.
Okay, that's really interesting. So let me just make sure I heard you right. So the at symbol and then whatever the Twitter address is, you want to put that kind of in the middle or at the end as opposed to the very first thing.
Absolutely. If you want a bunch of people to see it, right? And right. So there's a flip side to that too. A lot of people will put a bunch of stuff before the at just when they're having a regular conversation. And that doesn't always make sense. That just kind of looks like you're showing off. Like if you're having just a one-on-one conversation, definitely start with the at symbol because it's just a one-on-one conversation, right? It's not necessary to like put like a dot, I love you, like if you're just talking to them personally. It's like kind of just like being a show off, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So it's like, there's almost this like social, I don't even know what the phrase is, like a social cue or a social decorum to Twitter, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
You know, one of the things that I was also looking at just on, you know, I've got Twitter pulled up right now. So what is... what is that thing on the far left-hand side, like the trending?
Yeah, so that's going to be the hashtag spot. So if you don't know what hashtags are, so basically it's the little hashtag symbol. I don't know even what it's called. I call it a hashtag.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's the correct term.
The number sign, right?
The number sign. Yeah. Okay, so whenever you do a tweet, you can do it number sign, and then it turns your tweet or it turns that word into a hashtag. And basically, in its simplest terms, a hashtag is just an organization tool for people to search on Twitter. So there's this very popular service called search.twitter, and that literally lets you search different keywords, terms, all that kind of stuff to engage with your audience. And so a hashtag just kind of helps that organize it. And a lot of people use it for different ways, different terms, that kind of stuff. But if you use Instagram, that's what the hashtag is too. It's just a way to catalog what you're tweeting about. So you'll see a lot of people who are in marketing, there'll be like a hashtag small business chat. And that just literally organizes all the tweets that are around that small business. So it helps you kind of weed through all the fluff and the noise and allows you to kind of just pull what is exactly meaning to you. And it's a fantastic medium to kind of engage with your target audience.
Okay. And it sounds like it's also when you put a hashtag on your tweet, it also exposes it to everybody that's used that hashtag.
Yeah, it exposes it. It won't necessarily go in their timeline, but it'll expose the search feature. So if there's someone searching for that hashtag, that will be available to them. And so it definitely amplifies your reach. And so it's very important when you use hashtags to choose ones that are popular and relating to your content, right? So one of the things I did when I worked at an agency is, depending on the brand I was community managing for, I'd see the trending hashtags that would relate to the brand message and then organically push it into one of the tweets. Mm. And sometimes it's kind of an art and science to that too, right? You don't want to just use a random hashtag.
Right.
If your brand isn't relating to that, you'll just come off as spammy. But a lot of times you can really be creative and have a lot of fun with using these trending hashtags. And then people will see that tweet and end up following you, engaging with that kind of stuff. And it's absolutely free.
Oh, that's so interesting. So I feel like mental health private practitioners would be really good at this. They tend to be creative and spontaneous, and I feel like they could have a lot of fun with the trending feature.
Yeah, absolutely. And so for the mental health practitioners who are listening, it's definitely something that you should look into in your own business. So I've done a little bit of research prior to this interview, and there's quite a few hashtags that are around mental health that are just raising awareness. So definitely like do a quick Google search or Twitter search and find kind of those popular hashtags where people are talking about these super important issues. And then my advice to you would be to just jump in and engage, and not just jump in and engage and be like, hey, I'm a mental health practitioner, how can I help you? It's like just offering support and articles and other value, and then that will come back to you in the long run.
Yeah, I think that's a real key, because the tendency is want to use any of these social media engines as to try to just promote. Thing to realize is that you get the most value if you can be patient and wait and build relationships.
Absolutely. I mean, I learned from a great mentor of mine who I worked for as well, and many of your listeners will know Gary Vaynerchuk, and he wrote a fantastic book that kind of is in line with my own kind of way of doing social media, is jab, 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 right hook. And so that's a boxing analogy that basically says give, 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 and then go in for an ask. Mm-hmm. So if you're one of those people that just jump into a trending hashtag and say, hey, buy my product, buy my service, like you might get one out of a million or one out of 1,000 people to sign up for your service. But more often than not, you're going to be either blocked, spammed, all that kind of stuff. And so it's just a matter of adding value, connecting with people, and building those real life relationships. I'm not trying to kind of overdo the point, but Twitter for me is all about the relationships, because that can actually scale and that can help you long term.
Mm, right. And it's something I feel like most private practitioners would be good at. You know, I think it's, to use therapy language, it's almost like establishing rapport, but online. What you said something earlier about these search features. So where do you go and try to look for what the trending
me specifically, or
yeah, what? You, and then when you said earlier, you said you look for some kind of mental health awareness ones. Where did you find those? And
yeah, so that's a good question. So first, for me, like I talk a lot about travel on my Twitter feed. So I'll search like hashtag travel hacking or travel, that kind of stuff, and just see who's up, who's chatting, that kind of stuff. And sometimes I'll jump into some content marketing. I think there's a really popular one, hashtag content marketing, that kind of stuff. And it's just a bunch of trial and error. One thing about the hashtags is brands do tend to overutilize them. So a lot of the time, the popular hashtags are kind of spammy. Mm-hmm. So it does take a little bit of time to find the right hashtags. But there are a lot of Twitter chats and things like that. I highly suggest you jump in. A quick Google search of the most popular hashtags in your industry will provide a lot of value. Okay. For me, I can't remember the specific ones I got, but I know there's a hashtag like mental health. I think it's maybe mental health chat, or I don't know the specific one, right. But there's just a lot of mental health practitioners engaging, that kind of stuff, and just raising awareness of these super important issues. So it takes a little bit of time, but once you kind of set up a system for it, it's super helpful. I'd recommend, if the Twitter users out there are trying it, a program called Hootsuite. H-O-O-I can't spell it. We'll put it in the show notes. Hootsuite, you can actually track specific hashtags in one kind of screen. So you can put 5 to 10 hashtags that you want to engage with every day, and it'll just show them real time. So that will help you, as opposed to just going to Twitter search every single time.
Oh, I see. So you can, it's almost like it's right there. And then based on what's trending on that hashtag, you can then craft tweets to kind of cater to it. That's really interesting. Do you also use like that search Twitter feature up at the top to search for these hashtags, or is it more of, you know, just Googling it and trying to figure out?
Personally, I use search.twitter a lot, but okay. If you're a brand or trying to scale it, I definitely recommend Hootsuite or just organizing those hashtags. For me, I'm usually mostly just using Twitter for relationships, having fun. There's not too many keywords I specifically search out every day. It's really whatever I'm interested at that point. So travel, content marketing, social media, that kind of stuff. And after a while, you get a good eye for what hashtags you think will do well, that kind of stuff. So there's the hashtags and so the thing about Twitter search is it doesn't have to be hashtags. So that's a big misconception, is everyone thinks you have to search hashtags. Mm. They're a good place to start. But for example, if you're a realtor, right, and you want to sell more houses and you want to use Twitter a little bit more. I know this is a little bit different than mental health practitioner, but it's a good example.
Right.
So I would literally just search, pull up Twitter or search.twitter.com, and then search for people looking for a house. So I do quote, I'm looking for a house, right? And it'll pull up all the people that have said that phrase in the last 24 or 48 hours. And then, so when you do that, there's going to be a top button, and then there's going to be a real-time button. The top button, it usually will show the more established users, right? So that'll be celebrities, verified Twitter users, that kind of stuff. The other button will actually show you every single tweet that has that keyword or phrase in it. So I suggest trying both of them to see which one's the best fit.
Okay, cool. You know, one of the final questions that I wanted to ask you, Bud, is what are some ways that, you know, just being a small business owner, like a private practitioner, is how can they actually stand out on Twitter, especially with, I feel like so many people are on, and like you said, it can get a bit spammy.
So we'll go a few different ways here. So again, the first thing is engage with your users. So don't just like when someone follows you, literally just say, hey, what's up? Like, how are you doing? Like, just ask like general questions, right? Don't do it in this auto DM. There's a very popular phrase that's kind of gone out of existence, thank goodness, is they would actually send you an auto direct message after you follow them. And it just looked really spammy.
Right.
So the first thing I'd say, if you're really trying to get involved with Twitter and make it a difference in your business, is literally just engage with everyone. Don't let a single at reply go unanswered. If someone asks you a question, answer it. So that would be number one. Number two is use your feed as not a way to promote your stuff, but to add value. So it's a little bit of a tweak that I do. Whenever I'm searching Twitter, I literally will scan my timeline for someone needing something, right? Mm-hmm. And instead of just like pushing my own product, I would literally go and answer them. I'd retweet them if they're looking for something and need help. I'd connect them with someone. And that stuff will scale and allow you to build your brand equity on Twitter. The third and probably most important point too is be creative with your content, right? Just posting up a link to your website, hey, come check it out, probably isn't the best way to get attention. So I'd actually use some automation tools or anything like that to put a picture on Twitter. If you have a quote from a book you read, like make a nice little picture and then send that out as opposed to just sending the quote.
Right.
So just be creative and play to the psychology of Twitter. And I think those three tips will take you a long way.
Yeah. So those are great tips. With the last point you said, like adding pictures, do you use like Canva or how do you usually?
So Canva is a free tool, so that's a fantastic one. Mm-hmm. Buffer, which is a social automation program, has also just came out with a program called Pablo. Mm-hmm. And that's just like Canva. It's actually a little bit easier to use.
Okay.
But basically it just uses pictures that are creative license free, so you can push them on your Twitter and things like that and not have to pay for them. But I'd start with Canva. It's absolutely free. And you can actually use the dimensions on Twitter, Facebook, that kind of stuff. And so having those dimensions and just using the application properly is super important.
Yeah, no, it's really helpful. I feel like you added so much value. Thanks again, man, for doing this.
My pleasure.
Is there anything that you can just think of that maybe that I didn't ask, especially relating to like really standing out on Twitter or even just using Twitter in general?
So everyone says you have to be on all these different social media networks, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Instagram, all that kind of stuff. And for me, I think the biggest thing I see is a lot of people spread themselves too thin, mm-hmm. right? I absolutely love Twitter and I would lobby for you to be on it. I think it offers a lot of great value. But my biggest suggestion in the social media world, especially as you build your practice and you're working on your business, is just start with one or two social media networks that you're good at, that you kind of understand, scale that, and then move to another one. One of the biggest mistakes I see people make is they'll start a small business, you'll go to their website, and they'll have literally 10 social media icons on their homepage, right? So I'll click around to see what they're up to, check their YouTube channel. Oh, they haven't updated their YouTube channel in 3 years. Mm. Oh, their Pinterest has no pictures on it. And that just screams like you're not serious about it, right?
So it communicates something.
Yeah, it shows that you're just all over the place and you don't know what to do. So like Twitter is really good for those one-on-one relationships, connections. Instagram, if you're visual in any way, I highly suggest you jump on that, get involved in there. Pinterest as well for the retail space, especially women focused. That's obviously kind of, they over-index there.
Yeah, but even Pinterest though, you know, a lot of private practitioners have been getting a lot of traction with Pinterest, so.
Yeah, just being creative and like sharing value, right? So a quote that might help someone who's mm-hmm. having a bad day, that kind of stuff. And just it's a bit cliche and you have to be good at it, but just don't be boring. Don't just push out the same old content. And one thing as well is that I think you guys should be keeping an eye on is Twitter recently launched a native video platform within Twitter, and it's only for verified users right now, but soon you'll be able to just click a button, record a video, and actually talk to your Twitter users. So I highly suggest keeping an eye out for that, because that has some tremendous potential. If someone asks you a question, instead of sending a tweet back, you pull out your phone. Hey, man, thanks so much for the question. How can I help? And that will help you really stand out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's much more personable.
Absolutely. And I'm all about personal. And if you just put in the effort, it really goes a long way. And obviously, there's many resources out there. Copyblogger is a good one for content marketing, but there's plenty of other social media websites that will help with the actual tactical things of social media, which I think are important. But for me, I think the value of social media is just having a philosophy of giving as much value as you can.
Yeah, I mean, I think that idea is something that I hope the listeners take away, that the whole point of social media is to be social. And I think the other aspect is to also give more than you take. Knowing that the more you give, eventually, you know, there's like you said, there's a scalability to it. Like eventually that will come back. Awesome. But thanks again, man, for doing this. How can we best reach you if we want to touch base with you?
Yeah, absolutely. You can check out my website /podcast at www.aboundlessworld.com. And you can also tweet me at aboundlessworld. And hopefully you'll be able to see that I really do practice what I preach. I try to engage with as many people as I can. So I'd love to hear from you. And if you're interested in getting a little bit more tips, tweet me at aboundlessworld. And I would love to jump on a quick call with you who you're listening and see if I can help you in any way.
Thanks, man. Thanks for that. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for this episode. Until next time. Hope you enjoyed that conversation with Bud Henneke's from aboundlessworld.com. You know, Twitter is something, like I said, that I'm still learning and getting used to, but I feel like Bud offered a lot of really great tips. And I think the biggest thing that I'm taking away is that Twitter is really a platform where it's all about relationship building. And one of the ways that you can really stand out on Twitter is really thinking about it. It's almost from a mind shift perspective or a mindset perspective. Instead of thinking about it as I have to promote my content on Twitter and that's my first thing, think of it more as a way to connect with others. And in establishing that sense of connection, then you're much more likely to get a lot more traction on Twitter. The other thing I just wanted to mention was Twitter's pretty unique in that, you know, you get this ability to connect with people at a one-on-one level. You can directly tweet them. You can have a conversation with them that even their audience sees. And so, like, for a private practitioner, here's a very practical example. Suppose that your goal one day is to write a blog for a major website. And so something you might do on Twitter is follow a couple of the columnists or the Twitter feed of that website or that blog. And then over time, you might share some of their content. You might comment on it. You might even engage one-on-one with some of the other writers that are on there. And here's what that does. And that stuff takes time, of course. But here's what it does long-term. It helps you to stand out and it helps these people to see you as someone that's credible and someone that they can trust, and they're much more likely to hear you when you say, hey, I was thinking about writing for this. Would there be any opportunities for me to do that? Thank you, everyone, for listening to today's episode. You can find show notes to today's episode at sellingthecouch.com/session3. Until next time, take care.
Thanks for listening to the Selling the Couch podcast. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit www.sellingthecouch.com.
So if you've been listening to the STC podcast for a while, or you've been listening to podcasts and you've had this thought of, Mel, I would love to launch my own podcast in order to grow my business, just wanted to encourage you to check out our free podcasting workshop, which is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcasting workshop. You can basically sign up at a day and a time that works for you. It's 90 minutes. And when I do these workshops or when I record them, I truly believe in the quality teaching, so it's going to be well worth your time. We're going to go through gear recommendations and how to launch strategically and how to think about monetizing your podcast and how to line up your podcast with your existing offers and how to do it strategically and authentically and not salesy and slimy and all of those things. So again, the link is over at sellingthecouch.com/podcastingworkshop.